We're going to talk agriculture with someone I've had the pleasure of knowing for some time and whom I have often interviewed over the years. He is the always knowledgeable, always straightforward, and always engaging Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. But before we get into some key issues, Jim, congratulations on your upcoming retirement from MABA after 24 years at the helm and 46 years in the agricultural industry. It's been quite a run.
Well, thanks. It really has, Kirk. It's been a great run. It's been great experiences. The memories, span the decades, if you will, depending on what was happening at the time. And the people that you engage with over that period of time is just really, really fun. And that's what the real strength is, the people in any industry. Everybody always says it's kind of a metaphor, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah, I found that myself in my years at Michigan State working with the kids in the College of Ag and Natural Resources. It was mostly about the people, and they're wonderful people. What are some of the biggest changes that you've observed during your 46 years in ag, and particularly the last 24 years at MABA?
Well, those that know me know I like to do lists of three, but the irony is I have four on this one. I think the most profound change, not just in agriculture, but in business and in interpersonal relationships, is communication. The instantaneous nature of everything that happens today. I mean, we're all sitting here with our cell phones and our iPads and our laptops. And, 46 years ago, and nobody wants to go down that memory lane, but it used to take us 3 days to establish a communication with a European customer. Today, it's instant. And that's created two or three other challenges. One is everybody expects instant response. If you don't respond to an email or a text within 3 or 4 minutes, people get antsy and angry in some cases. Expect instant decisions. And decisions, unfortunately, we've found that some decisions that happen quicker are not necessarily the best decision. And then the third thing, that with all the communication, the rapid communication, it becomes electronic as opposed to interpersonal. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest challenges, I think, that transcends all of business is the ability of an individual to speak with another. Mm-hmm. To have a conversation like we're having this morning is very difficult for some that are glued to an iPad or a cell phone. I think the second major issue, Kirk, that we look at across agriculture, and this is specific to ag, is clearly genetics. And we can talk about biotechnology, absolutely, gene editing, gene monitoring, or whatever we want to call it, or however you want to phrase it. But the changes in production capacity and production ability are primarily driven by the genetics that we have today. Now, that may be related to gene. It may be related to traditional breeding practices. Mm-hmm. But if one looks back to 1970, we were producing about 70 bushels of corn in Michigan on average in the state. Today, we're well over 150, 160, mm-hmm. aiming for 200. And those good producers out there that really don't put their yield monitor information on Facebook are exceeding that right now. Mm-hmm. So that's been another significant change of the genetics available. Third, the focus on environment. When I started in the industry, the kinds of products we were selling, pesticide products, many of them have gone by the wayside. There are still some still around, like atrazine and dicamba and some of those, but many of the products that we were selling, in particular for pest control, insects, disease, those have gone by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And I think that's significant. The attention to water quality, the attention to the kinds of impact that agriculture and every industry has on the environment is increasing, and we're seeing even today, the focus on climate change and, as I love to say, if you don't think climate's changing, walk outside, because it is changing rapidly, and we've seen dramatic impacts of that. So I think environment is a key issue. And then finally, economics. Economics, I mean, in this current trade environment, and that's why I put this one on the list, is, if we would have seen an erosion of market challenges or market opportunities in prior years, like we've seen in the last 2 years, we'd have tractors on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington. We'd have farmers absolutely going ballistic. But the changes in economics, whether it's a market facilitation payment, whether it's promise of better things to come, whatever it may be, the focus on economics from a producer standpoint tends to be a little bit more tunnel vision than broader vision, and that's really frustrating. because as we look at in particular today at some of the trade issues, some of those markets aren't going to come back. And if they come back, they're never going to be at the level they were before. So I'm not sure what the long-term game is and long-term gain is or loss. But economics overall is also driving a huge changes in what a producer looks like, what the industry looks like. When I started, we had well over 700-800 individual agribusinesses, as we might define them in the state. Today we're, three-ish, four-ish, something like that. And if one looks at producers, I think 80-some percent of the land, the productive land in the country, is controlled by something less than 20% of producers, or those that are active producers. And that's driven by several things, and not what one would think generally, but if one looks at regulation on food safety, and speaking of regulation, that's not just what government may require. It's what individual companies are requiring of those that supply them, whether it's grocery, retail, or food service. So those requirements are actually driving more consolidation because of the cap expense required for folks to meet those demands. So economics are changing. We're seeing producers almost segmented. For example, a lot of support for very small dairy farmers. But very large dairy farmers have a much different cost of production scenario than the smaller farms. So economics are a real driver, and it's going to be interesting how it all plays out.
Those four major trends that you just articulated, Jim, anticipated most of the rest of the questions I have. So let's let's peel away a couple of those things. In terms of the genetics and GMOs and all that sort of thing, it's always intrigued me that people who follow the science of GMOs don't necessarily follow the science of climate change, which you already mentioned, and people and vice versa, because those issues have become politicized. But the science in both those areas is pretty clear.
Either you're pregnant or you're not. Either right. You believe in science, either you agree with what scientists say, or you don't. Mm-hmm. And it has always been fascinating to me. Those that might be the most ardent supporters of genetic enhancement will be the greatest opponents to climate change discussions. It's the same scientists saying the same things. They're reaching the same conclusion. The bigger frustration, though, that I think is significant, and just came back from a meeting where we spent a lot of time talking about this. Science is really cool, and science should guide decisions we make and things like that. However, consumer perception is a whole lot more significant today when one looks at market opportunities and looks at market demand. For example, the organic, non-GMO, vegetarian, whatever the latest trend may be, the one thing that we have had to do in the association, and I've had to do personally, is make sure that we practice the all-of-the-above approach, that we embrace market opportunity. Whatever that may be, whether it's restricting the use of a specific pesticide product in production, whatever it may be, but consumer perception and consumer demand is what's driving the economy today in agriculture. Many are following those trends, and many are, changing their business models to address and take advantage of those trends, while others are suggesting, by gosh, we know what we're doing, this is what we're going to do, and that's terrific. These companies aren't telling you how to farm or how to process. They're just telling you what they're going to buy.
My guest is Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Jim, you're around farmers, you're around business leaders in agriculture and what have you. I generally know what the ag folks think about GMOs. Increasingly, regardless of what's causing it, increasingly are farmers buying into the fact that the climate is changing? I mean, of all people, they would see it first.
They should see it first. They do see it first. They have seen it first. They're accepting it in their mind probably later than we would have expected. Now, the irony is, if one looks at farmer practices over the last 40 years, they're putting in more tile drainage. Gee, that's a response to intense rainfall, intense water on their fields that they have to move off those fields so the crops survive. We're seeing more and more irrigation. Gee, that's in response to what we see in Michigan, that annual from July 20 to a September 1 drought period that we have when crops need water. So irrigation is a response to climate change. We're seeing production patterns move. I wrote a report some years ago called Project 2025 that suggested we're going to be producing grain further north in the state of Michigan. That's happening.
That is happening.
Part of it's genetics, but a big part of it is we're having more growing degree days, more heat units generally, except this year, in the north, and that's units, and that's working. In fact, growing conditions, heat units and water, the irony is this year probably were better north of Clare than they have been south of Clare. So we're seeing some things change, but the most graphic example is where we grow dry beans. Dry beans always used to be in the Thumb and Saginaw Valley. Now they're in the western provinces of Canada. They pass through North Dakota and Minnesota, and sure, there's still a lot of beans grown there, but the competition increasingly is coming from the Canadian provinces.
Let's stay on environment for a while. You mentioned water quality, water management. MABA has been a leader in encouraging good management practices, and you have had a program that rewards those kinds of practices. But a little more on the importance of water and water management as we look ahead in agriculture.
Well, we claim water's our strength in Michigan, fresh water, and it is one of our strengths, but the challenge is water's only a resource if you use it and use it wisely and properly, and that includes keeping it clean. We have strongly believed, and our members have adopted and practice every day good management to make sure we don't load the water with nutrients, that we keep nutrients where they need to be. The challenge is that as we look forward at some of the things we're going to have to do, no-till is a major trend to reduce tillage. However, if you spread dry fertilizer on a field that is not tilled at all, that makes that fertilizer real easy to move off the field because of surface tension, et cetera. So we have to make sure that we have to think about different ways to maybe apply fertilizer. Liquids are certainly a great option. We're seeing more and more liquid fertilizer usage. But dry fertilizer, you know, if we need to incorporate it a little bit or whatever you need to do, that's going to be something we need to look at. But the biggest issue we need to focus on, all conservation programs we have out here are come one, come all. There's land that is more sensitive than others. There we can identify the majority of runoff in every major water body in the state of Michigan happens from less than 10% of the surface area of agriculture in the state. Let's look at that 10%. Let's figure out what to do with that land to help minimize it and help improve management practices on that land rather than some of the Class 1 land that really has very, very little potential for runoff.
That's interesting because when you see reports about runoff in agriculture, nobody mentions the 10% versus the 90% where there isn't an issue there.
And we've been talking about that for some time. Mm-hmm. And so we need to target because all land isn't the same. Every acre isn't the same, and every farmer knows it. Mm-hmm. In fact, frankly, if you talk to a farmer, they would know off the top of their head where they have more problems than where they don't have problems. And we need to localize and target and prioritize.
Let's turn back to the economics. And again, you mentioned this earlier in your comments, but the ongoing trade disputes with China, and then without getting into the weeds, but these EPA waivers recently, which have really ticked off farmers on these refineries, and these are not your small economically struggling refineries that are supposed to get waivers. They're refineries owned by some of the biggest oil companies in the world, and yet they're still getting the waivers. That has really outraged. I just read something from Senator Grassley in your newsletter comparing the Trump administration with the Obama administration and how the Obama administration was actually more supportive on biofuels.
It's a pretty fascinating number. The Trump administration has issued somewhere in the range of 30 every year, and I think the Obama administration issued something like 6 or 8 maybe. The irony is that clearly those decisions are not being based on production and industry issues, but being based more on, let's just say,
influence,
which is probably best good word to use. But it's frustrating for farmers. You gear up for an industry like ethanol. I mean, we produce an awful lot of corn that's destined for ethanol facilities. But the real frustration in that industry is that ethanol margins overall the last several months, have not been good. So ethanol producers haven't been doing well. So when you see the blips we're having in corn prices right now because of potential short supply, when you see the challenge of the RFS being abrogated with the renewable fuel standard mm-hmm. with the waivers that have been issued, we're seeing a lot of ethanol plants shut down, and we're seeing even more that are reducing their production.
Back to the China trade thing. I mean, there are reports. Some days it looks better than other days, but the deal is not done. I mean, you're pretty prophetic, but it's hard to read the tea leaves in terms of what's going to happen with China.
Today, I believe something that's signed. And I think that's the only thing you can respond to, or respond to actual sales. Now, China's come in and they bought some additional soybeans. They're probably going to come in and buy some more pork because they're hungry for pork, and we have a lot of it.
They got a lot of pork dying over there in
Absolutely.
China, don't they?
Yeah. The AFS has been a huge issue. Mm-hmm. But we have a long way to make up. And as I say, it's going to be very difficult for us to move back where we were in that level of trade with China or any of the other countries where we've had challenges. I mean, it is really frustrating around the world. As I talked to one customer in Europe, they suggested, you guys went south on us 2 years ago with dry beans, and Canada helped us out. So we're not going to throw Canada under the bus if you come back to the table. Now, that's pretty blunt, but it's reality.
Yeah.
And what we are finding, even in Mexico, even countries where we haven't seen huge tariff issues or they've been solved or relatively solved, we're seeing countries say, look, we aren't going to be as dependent on one supplier as we used to be. Whether that's the U.S. or Brazil or Argentina, it's called risk management. And they're going to practice risk management so they can maintain a consistent supply when some things like this create upheaval in the trade in the supply chain.
Talking with Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Jim, we're talking about some tough nuts to crack here, but let's turn to some positive news in the great state of Michigan. We're expanding our processing facilities across several commodities. I mean, there are some rays of sunshine in our great state, the Great Lakes State.
Well, it's interesting. Everybody keeps saying we need more processing. My God, look at what's under construction.
Yeah.
If you drive up 127 just north of Lansing, I mean, the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars being built just between here and Mount Pleasant is pretty intense. Mm. The new cheese plant, the Glambia plant in St. John's is going to take an awful lot of milk production. The soybean processing plant in Ithaca, which will come online later this year, at least a startup later this year, that's going to help process roughly half the soybeans we've historically grown here.
Yeah, the news is that they're going to accept soybeans this harvest season. Is that what you're saying?
They have some contracted beans they're going to accept, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if you go south, I mean, the Coldwater plant, the Clemens plant, we had a Clemens representative on our program this past weekend, and they really want to go to a second shift, and that would double the demand for hogs, which is huge. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of positive signs out here. The challenge is the current economic situation for individual producers is maybe not as rosy as they would like to see when you talk about expansion. But overall, when these plants all come online, we're going to see a fundamental shift in Michigan in agriculture. We're going to see a whole lot more soybeans. There's going to be some specialty crops challenged. Now, like dry beans will be challenged to compete with soybeans. They can be hedged on the market. They can be traded in Chicago. Dry beans can't. Sugar beets, there have been some hiccups in sugar beet production the past few years, primarily weather-related. But farmers are going to look at where they can make money, and they're going to look at where opportunities lie. And it's not just farmers looking at that. It's their friendly local bankers also.
Well, then there are the other kinds of specialty things. I was just reading where they're looking at sugar beets as a possible supplement to road salt, sugar beet juice, to cut down on our – I mean, I know that's still under some kind of research. But then we have the hops industries up north. We have the wineries. I mean, there are other specialty areas where there's promise.
The whole concept of agrotourism and farmers markets and all that sort of thing, is that going to take up the hundreds of thousands of acres of corn and soybean production we have across the state? Probably not. However, it's a piece of it. And that's what we continue to talk about being all of the above.
Right.
It's great to have all those industries, and those producers that do it well and those businesses that do it well can thrive and do very, very well economically. The irony is one of the biggest trends we see in production in the state of Michigan, and this is way under the radar screen, are specialty soybean production, or is specialty soybean production, that's usually destined for Southeast Asia, whether it's non-GMO, whether it's organic, whether it's a specific variety, whatever it is. Every major grain company in the state has a program that's related to that, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. So that's kind of fun to watch as well. And, as I love to say, in Michigan, we're not a boring I state. We tend to do things a little different, a little better. We have smaller bins. We do more than just traditional commodity corn and soybeans, and producers are able to make those changes. I mean, the organic industry is one that's easy to look at and easy to track. We have 54,000 acres, I understand, of organic production in one of our major ag counties in the state of Michigan today. And that hasn't happened overnight. But at the same time, those producers have found an opportunity to do things a little differently, maybe generate a little more revenue, and maybe be a little more profitable. Certainly things vary year to year, but it's an opportunity. And folks need to look at where those opportunities are, where those consumer demands intersect with their desires, and they can make some cash.
You mentioned the success of some of our producers. That would include certainly our dairy producers. Their cows produce, I think they're top producing per cow per year in terms of numbers across the United States. But it looks like there's, again, a little ray of sunshine in the dairy industry all of a sudden, but it's been rugged, particularly brutal for the dairy producers.
Steve Cooper with Continental was on our program also over the weekend from the Coopersville plant. And, yeah, the prices are up a touch. Demand is looking a little bit more positive, and that's good news. You know, unfortunately, some of that success is coming at the expense of some smaller producers that have left the business. But as one looks at trend, farmers like to think and agriculture like to think we're the only ones that are going through this, that we're the only ones that see this consolidation, we're the only ones that see the smaller operations go away. Well, look at your little local rural downtown. You don't see a local dry goods store there anymore. You probably don't see a dry cleaner there. You don't see a hardware store in every town. You don't see those little businesses anymore because guess what? Every sector is seeing this happen. Every sector in the economy.
Seeing the consolidation.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And speaking from also a small business owner yourself, I mean, you certainly... Jim, the Michigan Ag Business Association, I'm talking with Jim Byram, who's president of MABA, always been supportive of education. Mm-hmm. You have programs that provide scholarships and what have you. What do you say to the young people who've looked at the tough times in agriculture the last few years, but maybe they're at Michigan State or Purdue or what have you? There's still wonderful opportunities for young people in agriculture.
You know, it's counterintuitive, but it's also true in business and investment. It's true in education as well. When the particular sector's not doing well, is the time to get involved. When it's rocking and rolling and everybody's looking at it as the shiniest new butterfly, that could be a little difficult. We've seen that.
Kind of like investing in the stock market.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Don't buy the stock that's on the rise because it's already risen.
Right.
But in this sector, now is probably a really good time to get involved in agriculture while we're seeing numbers start to taper a touch. While the last 5, 6, 7 years, they've been terrific. Well, a lot of folks got in. There's been consolidation. There's been changes. There's certainly cost and expense expense recovery programs today in place at many businesses. So that can be a little tough. But as one looks 2 years out, 3 years out, they're going to be searching for people. In fact, it's interesting to note that if one remembers the 80s in agriculture, which were pretty tough, not a lot of people went into agriculture. When folks look at my generation, the epidemic of retirements in the industry, that next generation skips a generation. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a whole group of those what should be 40, 50-year-olds stepping into leadership roles that there's just not very many of them.
Yeah. And Jim, those careers, those high-tech careers, I mean, there's been historically a perception out there that agriculture is the bib overalls and the straw hat and what have you, but that's been dispelled generally, but not some people still need to be reminded.
You know, I love to use the analogy of the hip roof barn. The red barn, big red farmer barn. Everybody loves those. Heck, I have one. Had a new one built. They're terrific. The irony is that has nothing to do with what agriculture is today. A lot of folks like to look at old international H's or M's and think that, you know, that's agriculture. Well, the irony is the big trend in automotive research today is autonomous cars, driverless cars. We've been doing that for a decade in agriculture. We have tractors going up and down the field that the folks sitting in the seat are, I hate to say this, but basically ornaments. They sit there so they can turn around at the end. The technology in agriculture, the technology, we should say, in all vehicles. And basically, you can look at vehicles, you can look at drones, you can look at genetics. One can talk about any of those sectors. Everything has started in agriculture.
lot of it comes from military, but then it comes to agriculture next. And then it goes to the general public. So the kinds of things we see happening in agriculture today are absolutely astounding. We always used to say in the spring and fall, you'd never get a phone call from a farmer because they're planting or harvesting. And they have to watch their equipment and all that sort of thing. Today, our phones ring off the hooks because farmers are sitting out there and they're taking pictures of their yield monitors. They're doing whatever because the equipment is basically running itself and all monitored with warning lights and everything else under the sun that didn't used to exist. So they're looking for things to do.
Jim, looking back over your 24 years at the Michigan Ag Business Association, a couple things that you're really proud of and a couple things that need to have continued work by your successor.
You mentioned education a bit ago, and I think the one thing that I'm really proud of is we run a leadership program every year. It doesn't involve hundreds and hundreds of people. It's pretty intense, but we found in agriculture that we operate in silos these days. If you're a grain person, that's what you do. If you're a fertilizer person, that's what you do. If you're pesticides, that's what you do. Our leadership,
silos, no pun
absolutely,
intended,
yeah, yeah. poor analogy, but we've tried to cross those borders and bring those people together. And, it's been ironic. We've actually had people in the leadership group that work for the same company, might be in different divisions, let's say fertilizer and grain, that had never met. So it's even intercompany. But that leadership program, we've had close to 100 people go through that, give them experience in Washington and Lansing, and many of the relationships that they've established in that program continue to this day. And they serve as they're going to be the future leaders of the industry. Mm-hmm. Second major thing I think that's important, and this is a little retrospective, is we created a Leaders and Legends Award program. Because as one looks back 60 years ago, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, there's some people that really made some investments, did some things, are continuing to make investments, continuing to actually demonstrate that entrepreneurial spirit that everybody wants to talk about. I mean, they're the original Shark Tank, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of those folks out there, and we want to recognize them. Just this past weekend, we recognized Herbrooks, for example. The changes they have brought to the business because of their demand for organic
feed. Yeah, an amazing
feed,
company. Yeah.
Really fun. Mm-hmm. Zeeland Farm Service, Cliff Musin. Mm-hmm. Folks like Dick Kraft, a star of the West mm-hmm. Milling, Cliff Venix at Auburn Bean and Grain, several folks we've recognized over the years, and even some university folks like Bill Meggett, who was really kind of the father of a weed science in the United States when he was at Michigan State. We need to remember what those folks did. We need to recognize them for their success. We need to learn from them, and we need those folks to serve almost as icons. In terms of what maybe hasn't gone as well as we'd liked, I'm disappointed we haven't been as proactive on water quality as we should have been. There's things we should be doing we're not doing. We're kind of restrained by some of the government programs and some of the limitations or the broad-based approach as opposed to some of those that could be narrower and be a little more targeted. And I think the other thing that's is frustrating is that the lack of acceptance of consumer demand by some producers and some of those we interact with. Mm. The biggest companies in the state, those you would think would be absolutely staid and never change, they're moving at light speed. Mm. Whether it's differences in production, whether it's meeting demands for sustainability, whether it's producing specifically for a particular market with different traits or different production practices, they're moving at light speed. Producers in some cases are resisting that, and it's their choice. They're an independent business operator, but as one looks at what's happening in the future, the only thing that's going to change is continual change mm-hmm. and speed of that change.
Jim Byram, one of America's great contributions to world history has been the success of our agriculture from the very beginning of the country. For our listeners out there who may not be too familiar with agriculture or what kind of take-home messages would you leave from this interview about how they should be perceiving American agriculture in general and Michigan agriculture specifically?
Well, consumers need to be curious. They need to not accept Facebook at face value. They need to not believe everything on Twitter. And they need to make sure that they do what's best for their own best interest. And, you know, whether it's economics related to food procurement, I mean, not everybody can buy from the trendy grocery stores, if you will. We have the ability to produce economically here, lowest cost food in the United States of anywhere in the world. But the irony is we're seeing some of those economics shift as some want to buy some of the non-traditional sorts of items and production practices, and that's fine. But consumers need to pay attention to what's happening in the world and what companies are doing. We ain't bad folks. We're going to be here too. We're going to be on the earth, and the changes I've seen in how our industry reacts have been profound. Sure, growth in the 40s, 50s, 60s was probably a little different. Today, it's much, much different than it used to be.
Well, Jim, you're still in the saddle at the Michigan Agribusiness Association until February the 14th, 24 years at the helm. Congratulations on a remarkable career, and as always, it's a pleasure talking agriculture with you.
Thanks. Great conversation. I mean, this is a really interesting time. As I said to a group the other day, the only thing I regret, and I don't really regret it, but there's going to be more change in the next 20 years in this industry than there has been in the past 50. And that change is coming at light speed. It's going to benefit consumers. It's going to benefit producers. But folks better be ready to embrace it.
And on that note, thanks. Jim Byram, President, Michigan Agribusiness Association.